Thing to be doing. The trouble was that from the very beginning they had been afraid they would end by making fools of themselves, and they had compounded that fear by being afraid to admit it. At first their rehearsals had been held on Saturdays, always, it seemed, on the kind of windless February or March afternoon when the sky is white, the trees are black, and the brown fields and hummocks of the earth lie naked and tender between curds of shriveled snow. The players, coming out of their various kitchen doors and hesitating for a minute to button their coats or pull on their gloves, would see a landscape in which only a few very old, weathered houses seemed to belong. It made their own homes look as weightless and impermanent, as foolishly misplaced as a great many bright new toys that had been left outdoors overnight and rained on. Their automobiles didn't look right either, unnecessarily wide and gleaming in the colors of candy and ice cream, seeming to wince at each splatter of mud. They crawled apologetically down the broken roads that led from all directions to the deep, level slab of Route 12. Once there, the cars seemed able to relax in an environment all their own, a long, bright valley of colored plastic and plate glass and stainless steel, King Cone, Mobile Gas, Shopperama, Eat. But eventually they had to turn off, one by one, and make their way up the winding country road that led to the Central High School. They had to pull up and stop in the quiet parking lot outside the high school auditorium. "Hi," the players would shyly call to one another. "Hi." "Hi." And they'd go reluctantly inside. Clumping their heavy galoshes around the stage, blotting at their noses with Kleenex and frowning at the unsteady print of their scripts, they would disarm each other at last with peals of forgiving laughter, and they would agree over and over that there was plenty of time to smooth the thing out. But there wasn't plenty of time, and they all knew it, and a doubling and redoubling of their rehearsal schedule seemed only to make matters worse. Long after the time had come for what the director called really getting this thing off the ground, really making it happen, it remained a static, shapeless, inhumanly heavy weight. Time and again they read the promise of failure in each other's eyes, in the apologetic nods and smiles of their parting, and the spastic haste with which they broke for their cars and drove home to whatever older, less explicit promises of failure might lie in wait for them there. And now, tonight, with 24 hours to go, they had somehow managed to bring it off. Giddy in the unfamiliar feel of makeup and costumes on this first warm evening of the year, they had forgotten to be afraid. They had let the movement of the play come and carry them and break like a wave. And maybe it sounded corny, and what if it did? But they had all put their hearts into their work. Could anyone ever ask for more than that? The audience, arriving in a long, clean serpent of cars the following night, were very serious, too. Like the players, they were mostly on the young side of middle age, and they were attractively dressed in what the New York clothing stores describe as country casuals. Anyone could see they were a better-than-average crowd, in terms of education and employment and good health, and it was clear, too, that they considered this a significant evening. They all knew, of course, and said so again and again as they filed inside and took their seats, that The Petrified Forest was hardly one of the world's great plays. But it was, after all, a fine theater piece with a basic point of view that was every bit as valid today as in the 30s. "Even more valid," one man kept telling his wife, who chewed her lips and nodded, seeing what he meant. "Even more valid when you think about it." The main thing, though, was not the play itself, but the company, the brave idea of it, the healthy, hopeful sound of it, the birth of a really good community theater right here among themselves. This was what had drawn them, enough of them to fill more than half the auditorium, and it was what held them hushed and tense in readiness for pleasure as the house lights dimmed. The curtain went up on a set whose rear wall was still shaking with the impact of a stagehand's last-minute escape, and the first few lines of dialogue were